Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 280. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, you ready to talk about some pitchers today?
Yeah, pitchers, they are what they are. They're volatile. They're tough to evaluate year over year. But that's what we're here to do, try to help you out, figure out some good buys and good sells at the pitcher position. And even though it's hard, we hope that we give you some good names that help you in your dynasty league today.
Yeah, this is episode 3 of our dynasty buy sell series. I already did infield and outfield on Monday and Wednesday earlier this week. So if you missed those, go back and check those out. And this will be a fun one to wrap up this week on with some pitchers, a lot of fun names on this list that we'll get into here in a second. But first, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. Make sure you drop that 5-star rating and review. We greatly appreciate those. Check out our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty prospect rankings and so much more. And check out all the great stuff that Rotoballer has to offer. What are great contents, articles, audio, video, podcast. What are great tools. A lot of good stuff that can help you succeed this fantasy season. Use that code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package. Doesn't even have to be baseball, football, basketball, whatever you want. That gets you 10% off using that code TOOLSHED. All right, Chris. Again, these were tough. The sells especially are tough. You can find a lot of buys. I think it's fun to find the buys. Tougher to find the sells, as we mentioned in previous episodes. So we're doing the same as last episode. 4 sells, 2 from each of us, 8 buys, 4 from each of us. And what better way to start out an episode like this than with a reigning Cy Young Award winner?
Yeah, this feels like such low-hanging fruit to even mention this name. But I am selling Blake Snell in a dynasty league. And I wonder, like, he's still unsigned, which, you know, I don't know if that can affect and is affecting his value at all. And it's possible that it does. The fact that he's still unsigned. We know he's a Boras client. But he's sitting around, hasn't pitched. Maybe it's a pine opportunity, but in general, I am selling Blake Snell for several reasons. One, the control is just horrific. I'm not sure if it is the worst walk rate for a Cy Young winner ever, but a 13.3% walk rate is rather high, and that's not going to play. I do think that Snell had some good luck go his way this year. He had 256 BABIP, which is very low. I think BABIP is a slight skill, but it's going to regress to the mean, and the MLB average BABIP is around 300. So he was well below that. His strand rate was 86.7%, and that is well above average. So a lot of runners left on base when he was walking them and leaving them on. So that was huge. He pitched a 2.25 ERA. It's really hard to argue against that. But the xERA of 3.77, the xFIP of 3.62, those were much higher. And while those are still solid numbers, those are still a bit concerning, in my opinion. The Sierra was over 4. With that being said, I think it's time to cash out on Blake Snell. What can you get for him? That's really the biggest question mark, I think. His value's all over the board, and yeah, I don't know exactly what you could get for him. But I do know this. Blake Snell does not throw enough strikes, which is definitely a concerning aspect. We don't know where he's going to be, where he's going to land. For all we know, he could sign with the Angels, and I'm sure that would go really well.
That's totally either the Angels or like the Yankees on a short deal. That's where I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, and I don't think either would be a good landing spot. Him in Yankee Stadium, I don't think would be ideal at all. His home run to fly ball rate was at 11% last year, and I think that there would be potential for that to rise a little bit if he went to Yankee Stadium. So that'd be something to keep an eye on, just the fact that we don't know where in the world he's going to be. I think that really the biggest thing for me is that while Blake Snell is a really fun arm, he lacks a couple things, just that he doesn't get chased out of the zone, and he can throw strikes, and the high walk rate really kills him. So I am out on Blake Snell. If you can get a top 75 dynasty asset, then he's a sell. I don't know what he's going for, to be honest with you. I don't roster him anywhere, so I haven't tried to trade him, I'm not sure I've actually seen any trades like go down with Blake Snell involved. So right now is a tough spot. It's like I'm sitting here telling you to sell him. I'd shoot for a top 75 asset, maybe higher, and see what you can get. I'd at least put it out there and try to trade him. Like other arms that are like ranked below him that I'd rather have, like a game of would you rather. If you could get Bobby Miller, would you absolutely do that?
Yo, 100%.
Yeah, if I got Kodai Senga, I think I would do it.
Yep, Senga here too.
If I got, I don't think you're getting G-Rod or Yuri Perez in a dynasty for him. If I got Jesus Luzardo, like I'm doing that.
Yeah, that's the closest one so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd probably do that too.
Yeah, I think Luzardo has his fair share of concerns too, but yeah, I think that's the range you're getting in. So like, I'd even like guys that are ranked. Like Luzardo is not in my top 75, but I'd still probably take that deal personally. So yeah, I think you just put him out there, see what you can get. But I would like to sell him if I could and try to capitalize on this huge season.
Yeah, I think now is definitely the right time. Like, we give other pitchers a lot of crap for not throwing a lot of innings and being inconsistent on that front. And yeah, he does have 280-plus inning seasons, and coincidentally enough, he had a Cy Young in both of those years, 2018, and then obviously last year, 2023. But besides that, he's never had another season over 130. It's been a lot of seasons in like the 128, 129 range, including 2017, 2021, and 2022. But yeah, I think obviously he's not going to maintain a 2.25 ERA, not with walking as many guys as he does. Obviously, he doesn't give up a lot of hits, though, which helps counteract that. But yeah, I definitely agree with you there. It'd be fun to see where he ends up. I think this is such an Angel signing, it hurts. So we'll see. Maybe by the time this, we're actually recording this a couple days before it comes out. So maybe by the time this comes out on Friday, maybe he has signed. We shall see. My first guy here, who I almost didn't put on here, so I'm still very mixed on this guy, but I'm going to go Hunter Green just because I think the value, perceived values, is still way too high on him. Like, I think people still think he's going to be, all of a sudden he's going to turn into like Spencer Strider or something close to that and be a potential ace for fantasy. And I just don't see it. I will say I am intrigued by the report that came out today. This is on Tuesday night, about him working on a splitter and a curveball. So let's see where that goes. Because if I'll put a little caveat in here that if he can, let's just go with the splitters. I think that'd be more effective for him. If he can go with the splitter or develop his changeup more, whatever, get that off-speed offering that he can use against lefties, I'll be slightly more, you know, willing to buy into Green, because he's been primarily a two-pitch guy. And yeah, the slider's been pretty damn good. Not elite, but pretty good. 229 batting average against last year, 39.2% whiff rate. But the four-seamer was just hit around too much. 91.3 average exit velocity with a 20-degree launch angle. That's those two numbers together at Great American Ballpark, not a good combination whatsoever. And the slider, again, has been good but not great. So if he does add that third pitch, I'll be more intrigued, because obviously he can miss bats, even with the four-seamer not having as good of metrics as you would want, given the elite velocity that he has, averaging over 98 miles an hour. And with the slider still being 39% whiff rate, he's still striking out over 30% of the batters he's faced in his career, 30.9, then 30.5% last year. But obviously his the batted ball profile with him, not good for the ballpark he's in. So again, I think he's going to be still a solid arm with some, obviously some strikeout impact potential there, but just the perceived value on him is way higher than I think it should be right now. Again, I don't think he's going to turn into, could he still be an impact arm in some way? Yeah. But I just don't think it's going to be all of a sudden we're drafting him as like an SP2 for fantasy. And I think people are still holding on to that. I just don't think that's him. But again, I'll throw the little asterisk in here. Maybe I can change my mind a little bit if he does add a legit third offering, because he hasn't had that yet. And with the fastball getting hit around like it has, that was a problem. But for now, I'm going to go with Hunter Green here as my first sell.
So I think my next will be pretty controversial, probably. And it's Michael King, who has gotten a lot of love. Obviously, new team now with San Diego. And I'm just not completely sold on Michael King as a starting pitcher. And I know the results were good. Like I understand, you can look at the splits, you can see, okay, like he was able to handle being a starter last year, but it wasn't enough, in my opinion, to say like enough starts where I'm like, okay, obviously like he's going to be fine. Now, I think Michael King will be an okay starter, but I really do have questions about his ability to handle a season-long workload, because as a starter last year, it was just 40 innings. He had a 2.23 ERA in those starts, which was pretty impressive. Struck out 51 batters in those starts. So you can't argue with the numbers, and you can't deny that. I have this weird just gut feeling about Michael King. And I know the metrics say otherwise, but there's some things in the profile. I just want to see a little more, to be honest with you. I mean, he has not thrown. He threw 104 innings last year. It was the first time he had gone over 60 three since 2021. So he had 63 in 2021. He had 51 innings in 2022. And then he had 104 in 2023. So one, what's the innings look like? And I think that in itself is a question. Obviously, you expect an increase. So maybe 130 is pretty reasonable. But also, does the what's the fastball velo look like? Because in 2022, he averaged 96.5. In 2023, he averaged 94.8. So a pretty sizable dip there in the fastball velo, which is one of my concerns. And what does that velo look like over a full season as a starter too? Can that also have an effect? And I think it could. I really do believe that if the velo is not there, then what does the fastball look like? Because one, he throws a sinker primarily, and that's going to keep pitches on the ground. But the four seam, we saw some regression with it. Threw it less last year. He also did the sinker a little less in favor of a sweeper, which was encouraging. The sweeper was a really good pitch and had a near 40% whiff rate on it. So that was encouraging to see. And the changeup also, pretty solid pitch. But I think the fastball really has to set up those pitches. And ultimately, I just think that my biggest question mark with King, while there are several, I think, and the fastball velo being one of them, is can he handle the full starter's workload? And that's still to be determined. Maybe he proves me wrong. Maybe he's fine. But I still want to see it before I buy in. And if I miss out here, then that's okay. Like, I'm fine just being wrong on Michael King here.
It's funny. I debated putting King as a buy here because it's a very interesting profile. And obviously the situation here with him going from reliever to starter and having so much success in that limited time down the stretch. So what you had for concerns are 100% valid. I share those concerns too. But there's also, I think there's also a lot of good in the profile. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does this year. Can he hold up as a full-time starter? We shall see. It's going to be a fun one way or the other. With Michael King, I am going to Walker Buehler here, who I almost took off because obviously the recent news coming out that he's not going to be ready for the start of the season. So I'm like, is he really a sell right now? But if you just look at his ADP before the news came out, yeah, it's probably going to drop a little bit in drafts now, but ADP was pushing top 100, which still shows me that a lot of people think that he can just bounce back to the Buehler we saw a few years ago before all these injuries start popping up. But the fact that he's coming off two major surgeries, not back to back, but he's had his second major elbow surgery. Not a lot of guys pitch at a high level, and we don't have a big sample size to work off of either. But the list of guys that have done well after two Tommy Johns, it's very short. I think Eovaldi is one of them. I can't really think of another one. I'm probably forgetting somebody. People probably can let me know in the comments on when I post this on Twitter if I forgot somebody, but it's not many. So I'm just, that makes me uneasy to invest. And then you look at some of the metrics that were trending the wrong way in general before he even got hurt. He was missing a lot fewer bats. At his peak, he was 28.5, 29% walk rate, strikeout rate. That was down to 21.2% in 2022. Obviously, the ERA was up over 4 that year. He was getting the fastball was just not good with the four seamer, especially. The cutter was fine, and so were the off speed. So maybe he shifts that up a little bit because the four seamer, after being pretty good for him in the past, just wasn't a good offering. 365 batting average against on that four seamer in his 12 starts before he got hurt. So I don't know. I think he's still going to be a solid arm. I just don't think he's bouncing back to being, I don't think anyone thinks he's going to be an ace again, but I don't think we're even looking at like a top 25, top 30 starter either. I think he's probably more like, I don't know, maybe he's in like Jose Barrios range or something like that. It's like a top 50-ish guy. And I think the perceived value is still a decent amount higher than that right now. So Walker Buehler, still a sell for me, but maybe given the recent injury recent news of him probably missing opening day, don't sell right now. Wait until he does come back. Maybe it's mid-April, late April, whatever it is. Maybe he looks decent in his first few starts. People get their optimism up on him and then look to sell him. That'd be the ideal time. But I threw that little caveat in there. But yeah, Walker Buehler, sell for me here. Who's your? Oh, now we're going over to the buys now. That's right. Only two sells from each of us. Now we got 8 buys. A lot of fun names here. Chris, who you got to start off here?
Yeah, good. The sells are the hard ones. So the buys are much easier. And for me, I am buying Freddie Peralta pretty much everywhere I can in a dynasty league. And I know he's already valued as a pretty high up pitcher, but I do think that there is more in the tank here. We saw Freddie Peralta last year in the second half look like one of the better pitchers in all of baseball. And it was a true tale of two halves, in my opinion, because you look at the first half and he had a 4.7 ERA over 92 innings with 107 strikeouts, pretty solid there, but a 1.30 whip. In the second half, which was 73 and two-thirds innings, he had a 2.81 ERA. He had 103 strikeouts to 16 walks and a 0.88 whip. So some very encouraging things. The walks were down. The strikeouts were up. Overall, the results were just very good. And I believe Freddie Peralta is closer to that pitcher than the one we saw in the first half. He now gets to be the guy in Milwaukee. Woodruff's out for the year. Corbin Burns is gone. Peralta's it. We've seen him over the last couple of seasons. We saw the big breakout season in 2021, where he had 2.81 ERA across 144 innings. He was injured some in 2022, but I think that this is the year Peralta, we see him throw 180 innings. I think it comes with really good results too. Obviously, the strikeouts are going to be there. He had 210 and 165 innings last year. And I mentioned the K rate in that second half was even better. Peralta just has an arsenal that I want to bet on. You look, and he was very close to having all four pitches be over 30% whiff rates. The fastball missed it by, you know, 0.8 of a percentage point. So it was 29.2% whiff rate on it, 45.8 on the slider, 31.2 on the changeup, and 34.2 on the curve. And he throws all those pitches at least 12.5% of the time. So it is a true four-pitch mix, in my opinion. He does throw them to both-handed batters too, which is huge. So four pitches to both sides. I don't know. I just like Peralta. I don't think he's quite being valued where he should be. So I'm looking to buy, and I think that he is going to be a top 10 pitcher this year with maybe even room for a little bit more in there. So I'm way in on Freddy Peralta this year.
Yeah, he's definitely a fun one for sure. And yeah, really the last guy standing there, at least for the fun arms in that Milwaukee rotation. Though maybe they bring Ashby back at some point. Maybe they bring up Mizorowski. Robert Gasser, I think, is a great late-round play there. But yeah, Freddy Peralta is a fun one for sure. I've always been a pro Freddy Peralta guy. So I like that. I'm going to go Gavin Williams for my first one here. And I think long-term, like, he's the best bet on this Cleveland team. And this is obviously a very good pitching staff. But I think he's going to be the most valuable of this talented pitching staff. And last year, the numbers were, you know, pretty good. 3.29 ERA in 16 starts. Had about a strikeout per inning. But definitely has more upside and a higher K rate. He always struck out high clip in the minor leagues and definitely has the stuff to do that. So you look at the arsenal here, fastball sits a tick under 96 miles an hour, excuse me, at 95.7. That was an okay pitch for him last year. 250 batting average again, it's not bad for a four seamer. I think of many home runs, though. That was really encouraging there. He only gave up 8 home runs in 16 starts. That is very encouraging. There are 4 of those were on the four-seamer, and 2 pretty good breaking balls, both had a whiff rate above 30%, which I think there's room for growth there. Both had a batting average against under 180. So I think you see that K rate tick up from 23.5% up to probably more in the, I'd say he's more like a 28-29% K rate guy. So you see a lot of improvement there. And I think he's a guy that's going to maintain pretty solid ratios. You know, the walk rate is a little on the higher side, 10.5%. It was a bit better than that in the minor leagues. So I think you can see that tick down a little bit. But as long as he can locate the fastball well, yeah, I think he's going to be not an SP1, an SP2. And a guy that you're taking is the 7th, 16th, 17th, 18th arm off the board. I think he's going to be a top 20 starter is what I'm trying to say there. So Gavin Williams, definitely on an upward trajectory right now, and I think the value is only going to rise this year. So trying to get in now before that price tag jumps in Dynasty Leagues.
Yeah, I like Gavin Williams a lot, so it's a good pick. I'm going to go boring here, but Bailey Ober, I think, is still being a little bit underrated here from a pitcher standpoint. And yes, I get it. He is quite boring. He's not flashy. What he does is throw a lot of strikes, and he limits a lot of hard contact. There was a pitcher list. They dropped a new metric today. Kyle Bland, who does a great job with their analytics, there's a new metric, strike rate minus ICR, which is ideal contact rate. We've referenced that some on the show. Nick referenced that when he was on with us in the pitcher episode. But that metric, Bailey Ober ranked 6th in that metric among like pitchers with the best strike minus ICR. So his ideal contact rate is really low, which is a good thing. And he throws a ton of strikes. It's no surprise that Ober consistently performs and provides really good metrics. He's a unique profile. He's 6 foot nine, big arm at a College of Charleston, pretty local here to me. And since he began starting in the majors, like, the results have just been spectacular. We saw him post a 3.43 ERA last year across 26 starts, 144 innings, and 46 strikeouts. He's not a big strikeout guy, about a strikeout an inning. He's not going to blow you away with a fastball, but I will say this, despite the low velo at 91.3 average, the extension is world-class. He has 7'3" extension, one of the best in baseball, so the fastball does play up a little bit. And if you look at the chart of the pitch mix, his location is perfect with the four-seam up in the zone. Fantastic location, and that's what he excels at. He's getting such pinpoint location. He had a 5% walk rate last year, one of the best walk rates of any starter in baseball. Locates the changeup, buries it down, the slider, buries it down to the opposite side. He throws a good curveball as well. So Ober, I think, is just massively underrated. He does everything you want in a pitcher and just doesn't really get the love that he deserves, in my opinion. But I do think he's just a really good arm. He's highly valuable. I was doing some research for a best ball article for Roto Baller, and it's like, he is phenomenal in the best ball format too, because he's always giving you positive points. He had one negative outing last year on the Fantrax scoring. It was like negative 1 point, so didn't matter. And he was consistently like 12 to 15 to 20 points, which is very valuable in that best ball format. So I am way in on Bailey Ober, and I think the value is just too good to pass up. So I think you should look to trade for him, because I don't think that people really look at Bailey Ober like, oh yeah, that's a starter like I have to have kind of thing.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was guilty of undervaluing him as well until, I don't know what caused me to dig into his profile, like, you know, a month and a half ago or so. But I was like, man, this profile looks a lot better than I thought it was going to. Yeah, I think Ober is a great buy right now. And something I might look to do, let's say you had like a Joe Ryan. I bet you could trade a Joe Ryan for Ober and then get like some sort of second piece, whether it's prospect, a pick, or whatever. So I think that's a good deal to make right there. And yeah, I like Ober a lot more than I did at the end of the season. So he's definitely moved up my rankings a good amount. I'm going out west here with Emmett Sheehan, who I think the surface stats here kind of clouds how good he was last year and, you know, how good he was to end the season specifically. If you look at his final seven appearances, five of which were starts and then a couple long relief appearances, 31 innings, 3.19 ERA, 0.94 whip, 8.4% walk rate, 35.3% K rate, and a 176 batting average against. Overall on the season, he had a whiff rate above 40%. On three offerings, which wasn't done by many others. I think for qualified arms, or at least arms that pitched, I think it was over 80 or 90 innings, only two guys that did that were Blake Snell and Yuri Perez. And Sheehan, so many good arms in that system. So I think he just, you know, what he did flew under the radar, for at least to some degree. And the metrics, you know, are very good. Like, look at some of the similar arms to him on stuff. You're looking at Scherzer. You're looking at Woodruff. Like, he's got really good stuff. Fastball, you know, wasn't great, but it was okay. 240 batting average against. Did get hit hard, though. 504 slug, 91.7 mile an hour EV, 26 degree launch angle. Some work to be done there. Solid velocity on that, though. 95.4%. Would like to see him get more ground balls. Maybe use the secondaries even more, as he went 60% fastball last year. So maybe we see him drop the fastball usage rates, increase slider, changeup, and sweeper usage rates. I think that would be a great move for him. And I think he's super undervalued right now. And this is a guy that throughout his minor league career was very high impact arm as well. had a 29.2 K minus walk rate in the minor leagues. A lot of upside here with Sheehan. Obviously, you love the organization that he's in, and he's going to get a chance to start this year with, obviously, Buehler's missing the start of the season. So much injury risk in this rotation. Obviously, Glass now, etc. Kershaw's not back until August or whatever it is. So I think you're going to see a lot of Sheehan this year. I think you see 25-plus starts. Maybe he pushes 150 innings, and maybe he's a guy that's being talked about as a top 30, 35 arm or something like that next year. So I think now is a great time to buy Emmett Sheehan, and probably the last time to buy at a reasonable price tag, because I think it's going to go up considerably this year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think just the volatility in that Dodgers rotation, I think Sheehan's going to get plenty of starts. So
yep.
I'm in there. My guy is actually somebody that I feel like a lot of people were way out on. Maybe they're not anymore, but it is Shane Bieber, who was once really good, one of the best pitchers in baseball, completely faded. And then this year, obviously went to Driveline this offseason, and he put up some pretty gaudy metrics like at Driveline. And I don't know if it sticks, but last season, Bieber averaged 91.3 on the fastball with 17 inches of IVB and 9.5 inches of horizontal. He went to Driveline February 10th. There's this video that comes out. Bieber's now sitting 93 consistently. Whether that sticks or not, we'll see. But he's also getting a ton of horizontal on the fastball, like a potential 5-inch increase on that horizontal movement on the fastball, which I think is huge. The curveball added more depth. The changeup horizontal movement increased. And really, the biggest thing for Bieber is just that fastball. Can it hold up? You look, and it's hard to have a fastball that's 91 or less. We mentioned Bailey Ober. Bailey Ober's a unique specimen because he's 6'9" and he's got 7'3" extension. Shane Bieber does not have that kind of, he's got good extension, but he doesn't have that, the 7'3". He's 6'9", which is pretty interesting. And for me, I look at Bieber, I look and see, okay, this guy's been an ace in the past. That checks a mark for me. He's been an ace for actually quite some time. In 2019, he exploded on the scene through 214 innings, 260 strikeouts. In the shortened 2020 season, he was absolutely incredible. He struck out 122 in 77 innings with a 1.63 ERA. And again in 2021, even though he was hurt, 96 innings, but he was really good. 3.17 ERA, 134 Ks. And oddly enough, he threw 200 innings last year, which is a huge check mark for me that he threw 200 innings. He did have 198 Ks, but his ERA was still below 3. Excuse me, that was 2022. And then last year, it all fell off in 128 innings. Had the worst season of his career prior to since 2018, which was his rookie season. But I will say, I think that people were so quick to just jump off the bandwagon. They're completely out. Bieber's done for. And I'm not sure that's the case. I think that Bieber can get back to that 25-28% strikeout rate. Maybe he's never 33% again. Maybe he's never 30% again. And that's okay. I don't think you need him to be for him to return value here. He still has the elite command. And if the fastball velo sticks, like really, that's the biggest thing for me with Shane Bieber. Can he consistently sit 93 this year? Okay. Then if so, I think I'm in. You look, and the highest velo of his career was the shortened 2020 at 94. Other seasons, he set around 93. If he sits 93 again, I think there's something here. He's still got good stuff. The fastball, really the biggest thing. So I'm buying him because the cost is so diminished, in hopes that a 28-year-old Bieber rebounds and has a really good season.
Yeah, I would be lying if I said that I wasn't intrigued when I saw that video of him, what you just mentioned, the velo up. And yeah, we'll see if it sticks. But that was always my thing. Like, all right, how many guys, especially righties, can succeed at 91? And we say, you know, velocity's not everything, but to a point, it absolutely does help. And when he was thrown as lightly as he was the last couple of years, that was making me be more so out than in on him. So, yeah, definitely intrigued to see where this goes with him and see if everything we just saw in that video at Driveline sticks. And who has not gone to Driveline this year is my question.
That's true.
They need to set up some college dorm system like next to their facilities. Like, all right, just come here, sleep in the dorms and just work out. There's so many guys going to drive one. And hey, there's a reason why the drive one has an outstanding track record. But my next guy here, going a little bit younger, I'm going to go Ryan Pepio, former Dodger, now with the Tampa Bay Rays, obviously. So going from one good org to another in terms of player development. And, you know, Pepio was intriguing last year. He had 8 total appearances, 3 starts, 42 innings overall, had a 20.8% K minus walk rate. Yeah, only a 23.9% K rate, but 3.1% walk rate along with that. 3 pitch mix with a 4-seam, the changeup, the slider, and both changeup and slider had a whiff rate of exactly 32.6%. And you saw him be, he was never a huge K rate guy in the minor leagues, but you know, I think you could see, you know, maybe a 25, 26% K rate from him. Solid command and control here. Maybe he's not 3.1% walk rate, but I think there's a higher floor than most pitchers his age or with his experience level, I should say. He's a little bit older for at 26, but a lot of good here. You know, the fastball was solid, 94 miles an hour on average, 156 batting average against. All 3 pitches had a 203 batting average against or less. And a slug under 400. Not any problem pitches there. And yeah, the upside isn't like crazy high. He doesn't have the upside of a lot of the other arms you talked about here, or even like one of my arms earlier, Gavin Williams. But I think he can just be a top 50 or so pitcher, maybe even higher than maybe a top 40 pitcher. And I think this, the value is a lot lower than I think it has the potential to be this year. If you get like a full year of Pepio, I think you're going to see that price tag rise a decent amount here. He gets chased out of the zone, 32%. Whiff rate's above average. Contact rates are better than league average. Just really solid across the board. And the value is going to go up this year. I have a very strong feeling about that. Pepio, good value buy right now in Dynasty Leagues.
Yep. I am very intrigued to see what he does now post-trade. So I am very excited about that. This last guy, I will say, I completely caught myself off guard. And I'd gotten asked questions about him in my Discord. And I was like, whatever. I began to look in the profile of Cutter Crawford and began to get a little more interested. And I didn't think I would be. So I'll admit that I was completely wrong there and just not being interested. I'm now pretty interested. I think the cost is pretty low on him, and he threw 129 innings last year. He had a 4.04 ERA. It's okay, like whatever. But his xERA was 3.25, which obviously a good sign there. So like the results didn't quite show what others, like the other peripherals, thought that from that standpoint, what he could pitch to. He had a pretty solid 14% swinging strike rate, which was ranked 30th among all starting pitchers qualified, which I thought was pretty good. He limits hard contact. He flashed on that board that on pitcher list of the ideal contact rate and strike rates, very high up there, which was pretty impressive. So when I look at Cutter Crawford, I say, okay, what can this guy be? He limits hard contact to begin with. Like that's been established. He gets a lot of chase out of the zone, which is encouraging, while also throwing enough strikes in the zone. So the results are there. He throws a 6-pitch mix. It's not a true 6-pitch mix, but he did throw 6 pitches at least 6% of the time or more. So he had 3 pitches and then the splitter, sweeper, and the slider, distinct pitches there that were all at least in the 6 to 8% range. Mostly 4-seam cutter, which is interesting. You know, cutter, Crawford throwing the cutter, whatever. Maybe we see the usage mix a little bit here, and that's what I'd like to see personally, because the 4-seam's fine. The 4-seam actually had a 164 batting average against, which is pretty good, and a solid whiff rate. The cutter's I'd like to see him use it a little less. It is a bridge pitch from a velocity standpoint. Where I'd really like to see him throw more is the sweeper. I know the splitters can be a volatile pitch too. It was fine, but I'd really like to see that sweeper used more often. The sweeper slider, the sweeper had a 38% whiff rate, the slider 40%. I know it's a smaller sample, but I thought that was pretty notable to look at and say, okay, like there may be something here with Cutter Crawford. tweaks in the pitch mix. Yeah, he's not going to be an ace, but I think this guy's pretty solid. And the results are there. The underlying data backs it. I'm rather intrigued, and I did not think I would be. So thank you if you made me dig in, whoever was asking about Cutter Crawford in the Discord, because my opinion on him is a little different now than it was, but I think he's actually a pretty good buy in a dynasty league, and he's not going to cost you much at all, in my opinion.
Yeah, so Bailey Ober was your Cutter Crawford this offseason. Someone that weren't necessarily out on, but didn't think a whole lot of him until you dug in. Yeah, Cutter Crawford, is as a Red Sox fan, with the up and down season, especially with the rotation last year, he was just a stabilizer. You know, what he pitched in various roles throughout the season last year, but it's always came in and just did his job. It wasn't a lot of blow up outings, whether it was the shorter stints or starts. Just I like Cutter Crawford a lot. I just got to change that C to a K on his Savant page for the cutter. But this is so fitting. If he didn't throw a cutter, that'd be a travesty. I'm going to name my next kid Sweeper or something like that. I don't know. No, my last one here, I'm going to go back to the Tampa Bay Rays here, but for a much different reason. I just think the perceived value on Shane McClanahan has dropped way too far. I've seen, obviously, offseason, a lot of mock drafts. We did one for Baseball America. I did one for Roto World as well, like various other ones that we did with various people. I just saw him going 150, 175, even a little bit later than that. I don't think I saw him go in top 100 in any one of those mocks, and I see why. Obviously, he's got major surgeries coming off of right now, but he's going to be 27 when he comes back. It's not like he's going to be 32, 33, or anything like that. Still only be 27 when he returns in 2025, and I think there's never a great time, but I think he'll be a few more months removed from surgery than most. It's not like he's coming back in 12 months. I think he'll be, 15, 16, 17 months, something like that. I forget the exact time he had surgery, but this was a guy that was in that discussion for number one dynasty pitcher, and yeah, the risk is elevated now, obviously, but still one of the top five arm talents in the game, and maybe he never gets back to quite that level where he's up there with Strider and Cole, but you know, can he get back into that SP or the tier two range, I should say, where he's still like a top 10 dynasty arm again once he's back and healthy? Absolutely. Talent here is undeniable, and we saw that over the last 3 years, and that was the reason why he was my SP1 in Dynasty at one point in time in my rankings. I have to find exactly when that was, but that's the guy we're talking about here, and he's still young. Again, he's going to be 27 when he comes back from this injury in 2025. So I think right now, if you're not a contending team, like you think, this year probably isn't my year, I should probably gear it for 2025, 2026. This is a great guy to go out and target right now. While that value is outside the top 100 of Dynasty, get him, stash him, and then be happy with your return on investment next year. So yeah, it's a great buy for McClanahan. But I want to hear your thoughts on that, Chris. Because obviously, it's a tough time. It's always tough to invest in an injured arm. But do you think the value right now has dropped to a point where he's a good buy?
I do. I have, like, the TJ guys are tough, and I think that as the season wears on, like, its cost is only going to go up. The closer you get to the return, the more they're going to cost. So, yep. Like, right now, like, you look at it, it's like the complete out of sight, out of mind thing. And obviously, there's all the hype around the spring training videos, like the camp videos going around, like, this guy's a new pitch. But there's not going to be that for Shane McClanahan because he's not throwing. So I think that this is the opportunity. This is the time. I think he's not going to cost you enough where it's like, I can't buy in. I think that this is actually a good time to look and say, okay, now is a good time to at least feel out and see what he's going to cost and make the move, because you're not going to pay top 100 value, I don't think, right now. And McClanahan was consistently a top three dynasty arm for several seasons. And it's not crazy to think that he can't get back there. And even if he's a top 10 arm when he comes back, like, that's still okay. And I think that there's a lot of value in that. And it seems like to me that the only potential option for McClanahan is for his value to go up at this point. I don't really see you buying him and then his value goes down. That's hard for me to picture happening. So I would say from that standpoint, it is a good buying opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at what he's done over the last 3 years, 302 ERA and a 20.9% K minus walk rate. Now he's right up there in top K rate, top K minus walk rate, top ERA. For guys that have 400 innings over the last three seasons, only Burns, Ohtani, Scherzer, and Fried have a lower ERA. Fried actually has the lowest ERA over the last three years. So, yeah, obviously the talent's there. So, yeah, I'll definitely be trying to get him. I already had him in a lot, so obviously if I have him, I'm just stashing him. I'm not looking to deal him. And if I don't have him, definitely looking to get a few more shares of him this offseason and maybe even early on in the season as well. But, yeah, that's going to wrap us up for the entire buy-sell week here. Again, to recap, the sells here were Blake Snell, Hunter Green, Michael King, and Walker Buehler. The buys, Freddie Peralta, Gavin Williams, Bailey Ober, Emmett Sheehan, Shane Bieber, Ryan Pepiot, Cutter Crawford, and Shane McClanahan. That's going to wrap up the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you again for three more episodes next week. Got some fun topics and a guest lined up for next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.